Futebol. Hello and welcome to Burst of All live on Cam FM, the show about unusual news. I'm your host, Michael Quintero, and joining me this week we have John Nelson.
Hello, yes, I'm back again. I was locked in the bunker since the last time, so I'm quite pleased that somebody's come to give me some food and water.
And I will also have a note dispatch from my previous co-host, Chris Moten, all the way from the lovely Seattle in the United States, a little bit later. But we're going to start even further away than that with some stories from outer space. Firstly, we're starting with the fact that we have managed to avert the upcoming human-robot war before it has even started by the simple dint of shaking hands with a robot. This is a story that the commander of the International Space Station, Daniel Burbank, shook hands on Wednesday with Robonaut, the world's most unimaginatively titled robot. So, that peace has broken out already.
Yeah, exactly. So, Robonaut, for those of you who have never heard of it before, which include me, for one thing, was this sort of... They sent up robots last year in order to try and sort of see how they could do all the donkey work that humans didn't want to do. And they've made them such that they do look like a robot from the waist up. So we've got this great picture here of an astronaut and all the sort of gear, and then this sort of robot astronaut with the face. And it does look a bit Terminator-esque, is what I was trying to say. What I actually said was termite-esque, which is... Actually, it looks a bit like that as well, I come to think of it.
It's got this bizarre, tiny little head compared to this huge enclosure for the astronaut's head. It is kind of vaguely head-shaped, if your idea of a head is kind of like an old sort of Roman helmet crossed with a futuristic spacesuit.
Yeah, it does, but you have to consider that we have a disadvantage as compared to robots in the space race.
Surely not. Surely humans are superior in all respects.
We do kind of have to breathe oxygen, whereas robots can famously breathe vacuum. They can breathe out vacuum as well, so that's quite a sort of dangerous thing, although it's quite useful if you actually need to do the vacuuming in space, which is one of the tedious jobs that humans need to do. Their inability to breathe in and out vacuum means that when we're trying to clear up all the sort of, you open a packet of crisps and they go floating everywhere, we just have to like try and sort of gobble them in sort of Homer Simpson-esque style, whereas robots can just breathe in the vacuum. But anyway, yes, we have just in case we thought that they might be getting ideas up there in space all alone, we've sent some guys up there to go and see how they're doing, and they uploaded some program to the robot to say shake his hand, do it, and the robots have complied. They're still happy.
We're very much at the state at the moment where the robots are kind of like little kids that haven't quite reached the stage of disobeying their parents yet. So you're going to shake the hand of this astronaut and you're going to like it, little Robonaut.
How old is a child before it starts disobeying his parents? Because I was pretty much under the impression that a child starts disobeying its parents from the age of around 2. As soon as it sort of, you know, no, little Timmy, don't stick your finger in that socket. Bad Timmy. And then little Timmy goes, ooh, I wonder what will happen if I stick my finger in the socket. It must be fun, because otherwise they wouldn't stop me doing it.
Well, at that age, it's not so much like willful disobeying and testing boundaries. It's more just not having any idea what they're doing, which makes it a perfect analogy for these robots. They have no clue what they're doing, being as they are non-sentient.
Or they do, and they're very good at hiding it.
Ooh.
It's quite hard to whistle into a microphone. It's what I was trying to do.
Yes. Yeah, and before making them do chores, it is very much, in my opinion, a parent-kid relationship.
It is a little bit, yeah. Sort of getting them to take out the trash and clear... I've got American here. And clean their room. Clean your space room with their space shuttle. That's the thing. That's basically their room now. And if they're good, then they can come back down for breakfast.
But Burbank took the mechanical hand and pumped it up and down. It was, he said, a firm handshake, thus proving that all robots are entirely trustworthy. I've never quite understood that, the whole a firm handshake means you're trustworthy. I mean, surely it just means that your hand muscles a slightly stronger than they might otherwise be.
It would be a bit harsh to suggest that people who have, I mean, there must be people who have sort of had nerves cut somewhere along the line, so that, or muscles, so that their hands are naturally a bit limper or something. And as a result, you say, oh, this person isn't trustworthy because, you know, some problem with their hand. But you do seem to get, the alternative one is that you get people who go for the firm handshake in sort of a much more vigorous fashion, where they basically just, like my old head teacher when I was at school, had a handshake that could crush walnuts. So this was fine provided you were carrying around walnuts in your hand when you went to go and shake his hand. But otherwise, you would just end up with a sort of like fractured hand and then sort of have to try and write with it, because otherwise you can't sort of, as an excuse for, why can't you write with your hand? Because the head teacher broke my hand, does not fly when you're at high school. But yeah, so I don't think necessarily a firm handshake. You have to get somewhere in the middle, I think.
It's like Goldilocks. It's like, this handshake is too limp. This handshake is too painful. This handshake is just right.
Although after the too painful one, then probably the limp one would be great for you after that. So
this is like going, oh, your hand is crushed here. Let me just gently oscillate it upwards and downwards. I don't know. This is sounding like, I don't know, some sort of weird doctor is like, I shall now oscillate the hand. Put your hand in the hand oscillator.
A bit like sort of say to see how the muscles are, the throat muscles are working. And so like, oscillate your hand gently and we will see how your handshake muscles are working.
We shall also find out if you did physics and therefore are used to the word oscillate rather than wave or shake.
Yes, if you are confused by the oscillation of the hand, or the mere idea of a hand oscillating. If you start doing the sort of the circular thing, I can't really do this on radio, but you sort of move your hand in a circle and you sort of know that's circular motion. That's not oscillation. Oscillation is up, down, left, right, left, right.
Ah, but if you add the up and down, left and right, you get circular, which is really confusing.
Not if you do it up, down, left, right, left, right.
No, if you do up and down, left and right at the same time.
No, that would be up, left, down, right. Up, left, down, right. Up, left, down, right. Up, left, down, right.
Anyway.
The most silly thing going on in the studio right here now, which is probably good you can't see.
Yes. If you have got any comments that you would like to send about the new peace treaty between humans and robots, you can email us, studio@chemfm.co.uk, or you can use a web form on our website, www.chemfm.co.uk. And you can also text CAM plus your message to 80809. We have actually had one message saying, I have found out what happens if I stick my fingers in the socket. People panic.
And including you, I would have thought.
It depends if you can get your hand out the socket again.
Yeah, that's true. Otherwise, it just sort of happened to be a computer near a wall and just sort of like, somebody send help, send help. But yes, please do email in with anything you have to say, whether you happen to be a human or a robot. Unless you're one of those internet spam robots, in which case, not to be discriminatory or anything, but we'd probably rather you sent it to somewhere else.
And now we're going to another space story, which was cunningly foreshadowed by John earlier in this section, which is that scientists in Lausanne have created Clean Space One, the second most unimaginatively titled robot, which is going to be cleaning space in orbit.
So this is precisely the idea of what I was saying before, and it's called a janitor robot, I think, which conjures up this great idea of like a big space shuttle with a broom that's just sort of like one of those kind of little stick brooms that sort of goes out and just pushing stuff gently around Earth orbit and trying to, I think the idea is that it's going to try and pick up the stuff that we've sort of shot up into space, because I mean we're quite messy when it comes to space. We just sort of shoot these random things up and we say, oh look, and great, and now we found out what to do, we'll just leave it up there, it'll be fine, space is big. And now we're sort of getting to the point like, and you sort of try and put all the nuclear waste in the sea, you realise that you've just kind of, you've done more damage than you had intended. So we've now sent up a janitor robot, who hopefully will not just conk out and get stuck up there as well. Otherwise, that kind of defeats the objective.
That would just be a typical story, especially if it was like a UK robot. It was a UK robot, it kind of going, yeah, it kind of broke. Where did it break? Where it was supposed to be tidying up.
Either that or we'll leave all the broom bristles around, we'll send up a load and we'll just end up with all the satellites coming back down and just like a part of the atmosphere, one of those sort of spheres, which will just be like the bristle sphere, which will just be entirely little bits of wood.
I'm just imagining now one of the giants of robots being up there already and just seeing more space debris yet spread around and just going,
yeah.
More work for me.
Oh, I don't know. Kids these days. Yes. I don't know why kids. I imagine that if you're cleaning up and it happened to be in a school or something.
NASA these days.
NASA these days. Just can't get the stuff.
But the interesting thing...
I have the stuff.
The interesting thing about this is that actually it's not so much a sweepy-up robot, so much as a kamikaze tidying robot. In that what it does is it tries to match its trajectory to that of the space junk, grab it with a claw, and then just head back to Earth and just it and the rubbish burn up in the atmosphere.
So what you're actually saying is that we've developed some kind of catapult, that we're lobbing things up and trying to hit the debris such that it comes back down again.
Well, it's more like a rocket because it's got its own little motor on it, so it can catch up with the debris.
Just an advanced catapult then, really, isn't it? I mean, effectively, this is still the same thing that we had when we saw, like, early man saw a bird in the sky and was throwing rocks at it to try and bring it down. We're doing that now with space shuttles and clean space 1, 2, 3, etc.
But, yeah, it is one of those things where we've just realised that, okay, space is pretty big, but the bit of it that is actually useful to us isn't so much.
Yeah, yeah. As I say, I mean, like, this is sort of like we've tried to put all this stuff into this one area. If we could somehow do the sort of Voyager thing and maybe spread it out, then eventually we'd get a reputation amongst extraterrestrial beings, should they exist. Debate. As a sort of these just sort of people who do fly tipping, basically, sort of like fly tippers of the universe.
We're more like that, the ones like the families who just dump all their rubbish out into their little front garden
at the moment,
and all the neighbours complain that they can't, the postmen complain that they can't deliver their intergalactic messages.
It's sort of like a parallel of this going on in America at the moment, where if you go into some of the more remote states, when it's very something like Wyoming, where it's very open land. And basically what they've done is they'll buy a tractor or something or some car, and they'll use it for 10 years, and then it will get old. But instead of carting it off to do anything, they'll just say, we'll just leave it in the front garden, because they've got the space. They have these massive acres of space. So you end up driving along, and you see all these gradual aging of... It's quite interesting, aging of machinery as it goes through, as they keep getting new ones, and they've just left the old ones there. And eventually they're going to realise they don't have enough space in their front yard for all of these things. At which case, if NASA has told us anything, what they're going to do is they're going to throw miniature cars at them until eventually they knock them off their front lawn into a bigger open area, or maybe back into their house, I guess. I don't really know the parallel is to be maintained.
I mean, the other alternative is to hire someone to come and change it into modern art.
Yes, actually, that could happen sooner than we think.
It could be a piece on kind of like the waste caused by man.
Or a museum. Like, you could each one could have their own little museum of the machinery through the ages, with just all the little bits that it would be a bit boring by the time you've been to the fifth one and realise you've seen all this before. But yes, I think it's going to become culture. Culture is probably where this is going. Hopefully, we won't try and culturalise the atmosphere. Yeah. But
we've actually had a couple of emails. We've actually had quite a few. One is just hello, it's Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hi, Pete.
Nice to hear from you. Glad you're listening. Hope you're enjoying the show. And one unnamed this one. Do you remember, if you're getting in contact with us, do stick your name on there, because we like to know who's listening, and we like to know that they're actually named people rather than spam bots.
Yep, like Pete. Pete, we trust. In Pete, we trust.
Nominate for least imaginatively named robot, Robognor.
Robognor? Is it Robognor Regis? Is that
possibly?
Is that where the thinking for this one comes from? Romilton Keynes, maybe.
They name trains after cities, and they name boats after cities. So why not robots?
Why not robots? Yeah, it's true. We could be sending Robognor Regis up there right now to go and maintain the atmosphere.
We could have ones named after different Cambridge colleges.
Roe St. John's. Roe Churchill.
Roe Trinity.
Roe Trinity. I mean, we could do this all day, but not all day. We could do this until we've got through all 27 of them. Have I got that right?
And no one's pointed out that with somewhat dodgy logic, I feel here. If you have a rubbish handshake because your hand doesn't work very well, you're probably less employable and therefore more likely to steal.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I agree with that one. Yeah. That seems to presuppose that all working relies on hand motion.
That seems to imply that people who are less capable at jobs are more likely to turn to crime. I don't know.
Yeah, don't
buy that one. I think a lot of criminals happen to be incredibly able-bodied, and that's why they can get away with it.
Someone said, does a hand not undulate?
Undulate?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a lovely word.
I like that one. It sounds smoother than oscillate. Like,
it does.
Undulate.
Oscillate kind of sounds a bit pendulum-y, where you sort of get close to the top, and then you pick up speed as you're going down on the stroke and back up again, which is sort of not a handshake motion you really want. Whereas undulate is kind of nice and gentle.
Like
and
the waves lapping the shore.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. Whoever that person is, give them a biscuit.
We've also had the broken janitor metaphor is entirely more horrifying with the Clean Space 2 has to retrieve the broken Clean Space 1 scenario. Take this boom and sweep up your predecessor.
It might be a bit hard. If the robots are sentient, then this might be where they turn on us.
what, because of the existential horror by having to tidy up their own predecessor.
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, dear. We've got, as is quite stereotypical for this show, we've mentioned something vaguely mathematical and physical, and so we've got a nitpicker. So we've got, for circular motion, the up, down, and right, left motion needs to be in antiphase, otherwise you just go in a diagonal line. That's from Jasmine.
Oh, okay, I can see what they mean. Yeah, but it was.
And ironically, we've got two separate emails here, which both say, hello from Spambot.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't have said that. I knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, you do realise that we can actually see your IP address, and it looks suspiciously similar to one of the other messages we've had before. I'm not going to name names, but you know who you are.
And so do we.
Yes. So, yes, if you've got any more comments on any of the stories that we've covered so far, you can get in touch with us, as many people already have done, studio@camfm.co.uk. Or via the web form, camfm.co.uk. Or you can text cam plus your message to 80809, and text will cost you an extra 10 pence.
97.2, camfm.co.uk.
On air and online, you're Cam FM.
Hello, welcome back to Burst of All live on Cam FM. That was REM with Losing My Religion. And now we're going to move on to some more weird news stories. And in this case, we've got a section all about people being rescued and saved. And it's a happy section.
This is the feel-good section when it's all against the odds. Somebody's come in and rescued them against the odds. I've already said that. You talk now, Michael.
Firstly, we're going to start with one that's actually from England, a news story from England, which is quite bizarre for us. We've gone into space, and now we're actually all the way back down here. And this is in South Yorkshire, on Kinder Scout, which if you know that area at all, is quite a well-known hill. And Mark Larden and his girlfriend were stuck on the top of Kinder Scout. When they decided it got quite dark, they basically called Mountain Rescue because they were stuck up there. Temperatures were going down to -6. Don't want to stay out in the night like that. And the helicopter seemed to be having a little bit of trouble finding them to rescue. So they actually took stock of the situation, and with a bit of nice lateral thinking, they set fire to their map.
Yep, it's better than setting fire to themselves. It was the one auxiliary piece of equipment that presumably they weren't going to need anymore when you're in a helicopter. I doubt it's going to go. So, sorry, I'm a bit lost. Could you tell me where you are? Oh, the map burnt. Oh, nuts. It doesn't actually specify what they set fire to the map with. I'm presuming, given how cold it was and everything, they must have had one of those sort of cigarette lighters or something. I'm doubting they went and found two pieces of wood and go, come on, come on. But, yes, so they set fire to their map, and the helicopter was able to see them.
Yeah, luckily, it had a thermal imaging camera on, which, obviously, fire picks up quite well.
Yes, you could say it's a bit of a risk, than hoping that they'd better have a thermal imaging camera on. But then again, fire also burns quite brightly. It's sort of like a beacon, basically, really, isn't it? Sort of holding aloft a beacon and saying, look, we're here.
But, yes, apparently, Mr. Larden did actually go, hang on, they've got thermal imaging cameras on these sorts of helicopters. Why don't we make something, set something on fire? And the biggest thing they had was a map.
I like the idea that that was exactly his train of thought. He was kind of like, oh, no, the helicopter, it's not seeing us. Wait a minute, they have thermal imaging cameras on these helicopters. That's quite impressive thinking to get to when you're sort of presumably getting into sub-zero temperatures. You think you'd be suffering from hypothermia at this point.
Not if you're wearing clothes, surely.
Well, that's true. I would like to think that hopefully they were wearing clothes. Maybe that's why the only thing they had to set fire to was a map. I don't know where they kept the firelighter, otherwise. But, yes, I don't know. Well, it depends on how long they've been up there, surely.
Yeah, they are apparently, they were apparently out there training in preparation for a charity hike up Snowdon. So the question is, are they going to go up Snowdon now? And if so, are they going to take extra supplies of map?
Well, I hope, given the preparation, that they would get more money for it, in a way. You know, this is real dedication to the cause to continue after you've been stuck up somewhere. They'll probably take multiple maps now, just in case, you know, more fuel for the fire. Quite literally, more fuel for the fire.
Yeah, so there's one nice rescue story. If you've got a... Oh, actually, sorry, before we do that, there's a nice image on this story from the thermal imaging camera, which is obviously after they've finally been found and zoomed into. And there's kind of a big splodge in there, which is obviously the map on fire. But the other one of them seems to be almost like starting to do the YMCA. He's holding his hands up like he's just about to try and do the A.
We presume that they're in fact just waving their hands rather than doing an elaborate dance move. It may have been that they'd gone delirious through the cold and they decided, actually, this looks an awful lot like a club, I think. The sort of sparkle in the air, the music that I can now for some reason hear in my head.
The dimness. Dark.
The helicopter.
But the other thing is, it actually looks like a pair of ghosts on the top of a mountain.
Well,
with thermal imaging.
The thermal imaging camera, yeah. I mean, it famously doesn't pick up details that well. And, yes, and if you happen to be wandering around with a thermal imaging camera, you will spot many ghosts, because they give off no heat.
That seemed to be quite an unusual step of logic there for you.
Yeah, it was one I was kind of hoping nobody would pick up on, but it was pretty obviously wrong.
But yes, if you've got any other stories of interesting and unusual uses of pieces of equipment on hikes or similar, do email them in, studio@camfm.co.uk. We've got another one related to the theme of being saved from the cold, and that is that a man has survived 2 months in Sweden trapped in his snow-covered car without food.
Yeah, so this is pretty remarkable, actually. I mean, I don't actually know what the human limit is for being able to survive without food, but it must be getting pretty close to that. And they said when he found him, he was too weak to sort of say much more than a few words. But apparently he survived, or they reckon he survived, by drinking the melting snow. So he was sort of presumably having to brave himself to the cold quite a bit and sort of just sort of undo the window a little bit, reach out, get some snow, do it back up again. And and this was in Sweden, I think, where generally they're much better equipped to dealing with snow as opposed to here. I mean, like, if it happened here, you can imagine that somebody would be in a car, they get stuck in the traffic because all the roads cease to work as soon as any snow comes down. And so then you could presumably be stuck there for days. But in Sweden, like, they must have been quite remote area to not be found.
He's apparently only 1 kilometre from a main road in northern Sweden, but he was down the end of a forest track that obviously no one else has gone down. And just to like show the difference between this country and Sweden, police said the temperature in the area had recently dropped to minus 30 degrees Celsius.
Ouch.
None of this minus 6 malarkey.
Yes, all of you wandering around in Cambridge going, oh, it's a bit niffy at the moment when it was like minus 6. Think how much worse it would be if you were stuck in a car in Sweden. There was some poor blighter who was there. And, well done on him for surviving so long.
He was discovered by some snowmobilers who thought that it was just an abandoned car. And that for some reason they just thought, oh, let's just dig our way into the window. And then they saw movement inside. So it must be like one of those horror movies. Like, do 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 do
It didn't help that to keep himself sane, he'd been playing the same sort of tape over and over again, which happened to be Carl Orff's greatest hits. So as they got better, so they suddenly started hearing, boom, boom, that was Carmina Burruna, by the way, in case that wasn't clear.
It wasn't clear.
Yeah, sorry about that. I can't sing.
But, yeah, that just, how do you survive that long? Doctors have said that normally they expect people to survive for about 4 weeks in those conditions, rather than twice that. So this guy's, they reckon this guy might have gone into some sort of human form of hibernation to survive.
Human form of hibernation?
Yeah.
It's funny, I seem to go in some sort of human form of hibernation when the term ends, but I suspect that it's probably a bit different to this one.
Yeah, not quite a medical thing. They said that the man said himself he hadn't eaten anything since December.
Yeah, and the police said they have no reason to doubt him. I mean, why would you say, oh yeah, I've just been stuck in my car here, you know, for 2 months, when in fact it had been, you know, a day. That doesn't really make any sense as a story.
It'd be a really bad attempt to try and get out the fact you hadn't been into work that week.
or the last two months,
yeah.
In fact.
But, yeah, he said that, but he just said the man who was too weak to utter more than a few words. I just like to imagine he kind of went, Rosebud, or similar, or some other cryptic reference from a famous literature.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Presumably Rosebud in Swedish would be the correct thing. Otherwise, that would have been even stranger had he turned out to sort of be referencing something in English.
We've had a couple of emails. Two from Sarah, who said, surely everyone knows the YMCA makes people look hot, in inverted commas. So I'm not sure exactly what Sarah is implying there.
I think the hot in inverted commas says it all, really, doesn't it? Mm.
And also that maybe the two rescue stories are linked. The Swedish man was also training for the Charity Snowden trial and misunderstood, allowing himself to be heavily snowed on.
Well, hey! He also misunderstood the fact that you can't really drive up Snowden in a car.
He was just snowed on, but yes. He wouldn't have. If he thought he had to be snowed on, he could have assumed that cars were okay rather than driving up a mountain.
It's true. Sorry, my brain just briefly stopped working there.
And we've had a request here.
Request?
A request for the next musical break is that you perform the complete Bohemian Rhapsody a cappella.
Maybe another time.
But before that, we've actually got another dispatch from our man in America, Chris Smoten. Hi, Chris.
Hello again, Michael. This week in Seattle has been a bad one for the long arm of the law. The metaphorical appendage took its first bash in its form as the National Marine Fisheries Service, which probably ought to be the long mermaid-esque tail of the law, but never mind. The arm-slash-tail first got itself into trouble after it overreached-slash-under-wriggled financially, purchasing itself an undercover pleasure yacht, which its agents proceeded to take on a series of jollies around Seattle Harbor and the greater Puget Sound region. Allegedly bought for twice the price of the Fisheries Service initial proposal, at a whopping $300,000, the yacht featured a 20-inch plasma TV, hardwood cabin floors, and vanity countertops. Although I'm not quite sure how much luxury the officers were getting there. Their television is smaller than the screen I'm using to plan this very ramble, and theirs is likely saltier, less stable, and considerably more likely to sink. Hardwood cabin floors are all well and good, but I wouldn't recommend installing anything unusually hard near incompetent amateur sailors. And just how vain can a countertop get, exactly? When was the last time you heard a smug toff in the pub regale you as to how not only had he triumphed in the field of boat-have, but that bit that keeps the coffee jar from falling into the drawers is just exquisite? However much they appreciated their pretend luxury, the vessel was officially tasked with keeping an eye on whale-watching tours, presumably in order to make sure no tourists had sneakily hidden a harpoon gun along with their sandwiches and suntan lotion. Or possibly to make sure that no whales were nicking the tourists, or boats. Meanwhile, the officers maintained their cover by keeping at least two servicemen on deck barbecuing burgers and hot dogs at all times. Their game finally came to an end after the expense reports surfaced, when they attempted to claim a further $10,000 after operator error cost them an engine. Meanwhile, back on dry land, Washington State prison guards have complained that their uniforms are of insufficient quality. Uniforms which were made by the very prisoners that they guarded, who were paid between 44 cents and $1.55 an hour for their trouble. One guard, dressed only in orange clown trousers and a fez, complained that whilst it saved the prison service around $600,000 a year, it did so at the cost of their dignity. A spokesman for the Washington State Patrol, wearing a jacket cobbled together from discarded bowler hats, noted that the prisoners supplied license plates and furniture in other states without causing undue trouble. The chief of the prison service, entirely naked but for an enormous cravat worn in the manner of a loincloth, noted his agreement from behind a desk with a 60-degree list supporting a 50-50 angle poise lamp / hairdryer. A spokesman for the fisheries service noted that the prisoners made really excellent nautical-fitted kitchens, but the bill to eliminate the service passed overwhelmingly regardless. More from America, this time next week. For now, back to you, Michael, and the abstract concept of guest.
97.2, camfm.co.uk.
On air and online, your Cam FM.
Welcome back to Burstable, live on Cam FM, your source of silly news stories and random discussion about them. That was John Nelson performing his unique a cappella version of Bohemian Rhapsody, as requested earlier in the show.
Thank you very much. It's taken a bit out of me, actually. It's quite hard to do all those, but I hope you all enjoyed it at home.
It's amazing how much it sounded like Aerodynamic by Daft Punk, really.
It is. Well, my inspiration comes from Daft Punk, you see. I sort of thought, in order to make a unique a cappella version of these things, you have to put your own spin on it. But I'm not that imaginative, so I put Daft Punk's spin on it.
So we are now moving on to a section about that is just tenuously linked to Chris Moten's Dispatch from America. This time we're going over to Las Vegas, where a mobster museum has opened in Las Vegas with a collection of murder weapons.
Yes, so given all the stories that have been coming out over the... or points of view that have been coming out over the last few years about the ideas of video games getting gradually more and more graphic and how this is encouraging children to become more violent, they've decided to counteract this by opening up a museum about mobsters where they can teach children how to load a Tommy gun. Because obviously coming into contact with these things in real life is far less dangerous than staring at a screen using an Xbox controller, which, as we all know, is a perfect replica of a revolver.
But the brilliant thing about this is how people are comparing how Las Vegas has changed and said it turned corporate after having been basically built, they claim it built by the mob. And
you've changed,
like,
man. You've changed.
But a history professor working at the College of Southern Nevada in Las Vegas, Mr. Michael Green, said, "We felt nostalgic the moment the old days ended. To Americans, Las Vegas will always have that image and they don't come here for Mickey Mouse."
Well, no. Presumably they go to Disneyland for Mickey Mouse. If you're going to Las Vegas for Mickey Mouse, you've pretty much got your trajectory completely wrong. But yes, I mean, you can see their point, like the sort of this idea of the seedy underworld. It's something that's sort of coming back into fashion, this kind of gangster thing with, what was it? Was it Boardwalk? Was that the show that they had?
So, yeah.
Yeah, and that was, again, another that was an area that was really, like, I think, suffering, under-deprived area that had done really well under the gangsters, so, like, let's bring back the gangsters. So they are sort of threatening this idea of gradually making America more like The Godfather, which, I suppose, if that's what they want, then fine?
It's an interesting gamble because it's a second mob theme attraction to open there. The previous one was the Mob Experience.
The Mob Experience.
I like to think that the mob that they're talking about there is the one from Rocky Races. all the little gangsters who will fit in that car.
The Anthill Mob.
The Anthill Mob.
Yes. I was thinking more kind of like We Are the Angry Mob by the Kaiser Chiefs. The Mob Experience is basically you just get put into, like, they get... they open the doors at the same time for all the people who want to go in. They cram them into a small room and then they just sort of leave them there for a while until they become a mob. And this is the mob experience that they have here.
Yeah, but for bonus points, they get given out placards with political slogans on.
just to help things along. But yes, and then they send in the anthill mob, presumably, to go and give them the real mob experience.
Yeah, they've even got the FBI involved in this. This is one of the most brilliant bits. A local FBI, a former special agent, said, "We wanted to make sure the truth came out about the mob."
Oh, what? So I thought you meant that the FBI agent was going to be sort of sitting there, sort of like gradually twiddling his pen. Sort of people come and go, "Are you a gangster?" And you'll go, "Are you a gangster?" And this would just be the cunning way of trying to make sure that he got all the mob, the current mafioso that were around, who's just sort of going to see who turned up to the mob experience and said, yeah, I remember that gun.
That would be ridiculous. Did that really happen?
What?
Would someone be stupid enough to go, that's what I used to commit a crime?
Well, if it was, you know, back in the good old days, if that's what they were advertising it as.
You went a bit Australian then. Good old days.
Good old days. Yeah, did I? Oh, never mind.
So would you go to this mob-based museum?
It depends on whether I was in Las Vegas or not. I wouldn't go to Las Vegas specifically to go to the mob-based museum. I don't know. I suppose I probably would. Just out of interest, I'd like, it'd be interesting to go to some mob-based exhibition, I guess, but I don't think you'd need to do more than one, maybe. I don't know. I don't think I need to know how to learn a Tommy gun. So it depends. It sort of says there's one room with kind of authentic photographs of scenes of crime and things like that, but then it also says like it's going to show the inventive ways that gangsters used to do their gangstery deeds, which sort of feels like it's romanticizing it a bit and is giving it this this sort of idea that crime is glamorous somehow.
Apparently on the email it says that it's a national museum of organized crime and law enforcement, and I just like to just imagine attach words differently in that. So is it organized crime and law enforcement, or it's organised crime and also organised law enforcement, rather than the sort of law enforcement you get in lots of TV cop shows, where it's like, you're a loose cannon, you never obey the rules. It's all about all the FBI agents, all the police officers who actually stick to the rules, have a strict code of conduct. They're not going to try and cheat their way into getting arrest.
All the others, they're glorified in all these films and everything and these programs. We want to make sure that the decent, honest, working law enforcement officers who go by the book are recognized with this museum. And also some crime. Because otherwise, you know, it would kind of do down what they do.
It's organized crime rather than just kind of like random crime.
Yeah. When you were saying that, I was actually trying to work out the acronym for it. I think it's NMOCAL or something like that.
NMOCAL,
which doesn't quite roll off the tongue. I'm fairly sure they could have changed the museum to like a library or something, then it'd be like LOCAL, which is a word, but completely irrelevant, unfortunately. There must be some way they could get mob in there. Museum of
Bullets.
Yes, yeah. Or something like that.
That one was pretty awful. If you've got a much better acronym or a much better name for this museum, please get in touch with us. You can email us, studio@camfm.co.uk, via the web form, camfm.co.uk, or you can text cam plus your message to 80809, and text will cost 10p plus your standard message rate. We're going to move on from crime. Now we've kind of like had all of that seediness and crime. We're going to move now to something which may or may not be uplifting, depending on your preferences. But it's the obligatory animal section of the show.
Yes, we felt we were getting a bit dark there with the crime, so we're going back to the fluffy animals. Are they all fluffy or furry? One of the two.
Well, we're starting off with the fact that a company has released onto TV the first advert claiming to be the first advert aimed directly at dogs. Not at their owners, at the dogs.
So funnily enough, this is actually an advert for dog food. It's not an advert for like a Porsche or something like that, which, you know, as great as it would be to try and target the market of dogs, don't have a lot of spending power and are unlikely to, you know, somebody owns a dog and they go, wow, that dog really likes that Porsche. I better get one. You know, it's really important to me that my dog likes my car, because if it's a Porsche, I'm clearly not going to let him anywhere near it.
It's like one of those things occasionally you hear about people trying to bequest all of their great fortune to their pet. So there must be a cat somewhere. It's normally cats rather than dogs. There must be a cat there that could buy a Porsche.
They presume that if they gave the dog the great fortune, that it would just bury it in the garden. whereas the cat would
lounge on the leather seats.
Yeah, exactly. They'd sort of like, they'd get the big pile of money and then they'd just sort of like roll around in it. And, yeah.
That was the sound of a cat in a Porsche.
Yeah.
It sounds like a cat anywhere else.
It sort of has to be slightly more, I don't know, you need to be slightly more echoey if it's a cat in a Porsche. Meow. I don't know if that, I tried to do a cupped hands thing to make it more echoey, but I don't think that really worked.
The vet speaking for Baker's Dog Food, who are getting a lot of publicity after this, it seems, said there is a chance younger people could hear it, but I couldn't say how young.
In other words, they haven't tried getting gradually younger and younger people. So, yes, basically the point of... we haven't actually explained how this advert is aimed at dogs. I think the idea is that they use some sort of high-pitched noises that dogs can hear and get very excited by, like, you know, the dog whistles that shepherds have. I don't know why... Presumably that would just make the dog sort of either want to go and chase some sheep or quite agitated or something like that. I don't see how it's going to make the dog go, dog food, yum. But yes, it's got all the obligatory dogs driving vans and things like that on the advert. I don't know why that's obligatory for a dog food advert. Dogs doing human activities.
Is that all the owners go, yeah, my dog's like a real person. They're a member of the family, and they seem to want this. So just like when my kids pay attention to things on the TV, I shall buy this for my dog that is paying attention to the TV.
Well, I mean, they have a point, because if the dog looks like it really wants the food, then it would make sense, because the dog is the one who's going to be eating the food. There's no point getting something for the dog that you really want to eat, because then, for one thing, either you're spending far too much money feeding your dog, or... you are spending far little too money on feeding yourself. So there's no point in doing that, because the dog is going to be the one to eat it. But then again, I can't have a feeling that the dog is not going to associate the advert with the food it gets later. So whilst it may seem like the dog is having a good time or looking really happy at the advert, in fact, the dog is probably not making this connection, thinking, you know, when he gets his food, that's for something else. He's looking at it and going, oh, wish it was Baker's. Why have they not bought me the Baker's? I really like that advert. Why did they not get that?
Yeah, I've heard there have been a couple of different news websites which have picked up on this and tried to test out the advert on some dogs. And it seems half the time the dogs go just a bit mad around the house. And then a quarter of the time they look at the screen, and another quarter of the time they just ignore it. Based on my entirely unscientific quick flick through news websites, did not take those percentages to be anything other than plucked out of thin air.
So, yeah, that doesn't really bode well if half of them are just going mad around the house. That doesn't really encourage you to buy the dog food, does it? Oh, great. If I buy this dog food, my dog will go nuts every time they eat it. It's not generally the reason why you have a dog, is so it can rampage around the house.
But there is at least one, you know, good, depending on some definitions of good, thing to come out of this advert, and that's that on the BBC News website now, there is a picture of a dog with a BBC Radio 1 microphone in front of him, as if he's being interviewed about his latest single.
It's funny you should say that, because that was the thing I picked up as being the best thing about the story as well. It comes with the glorious caption as well. Sometimes BBC have a lot of fun with their captions for pictures, which is basically Milo, the dog, was very unimpressed with the advert or something.
Milo wasn't too interested in the advert.
Wasn't too interested in the advert, and you can see from him being interviewed, you know, he's kind of giving you the blank face. He's kind of, just not really, you know, it doesn't really do anything for me.
Yeah. Someone has pointed out that TVs might not even be able to reproduce this level of frequency that well.
That's true. It probably wouldn't work too well if you're using laptop speakers, for one thing.
The sounds are apparently between 18,000 and 20,000 kilohertz. So that's which seems like quite a lot. And I think someone may have made a typo there.
Yeah, I actually know very little about this, so just any numbers to me. Even if you didn't say kilohertz, even if you'd called it jam, I probably would have believed you. Well, maybe not jam.
The sounds are between 18,000 and 20,000 jam. Well, I like the idea of jam as a like audio level, because You might think of jam as in the stuff, but no, I'm thinking jam as in what you're getting together, getting mates around, we're going to have a jam,
yeah, exactly.
And it's going to go all the way up to 18,000 jam.
18,000 jam.
Maybe in 20K jam.
You can imagine when... You can imagine when Iron Maiden were sort of like starting up and going and having jams, they would have reached a serious level of jam. They really would have done.
Yeah, well, is it a logarithmic scale of jam? Or?
Actually, I can't help feeling the jam probably reached the most jam of any band. But yes, that's all I have to say about jam. It's probably not all I have to say about jam, but it's all that I really should say about jam.
Moving on, we've got another news story which seems to be designed just to keep on appearing in the BBC's most shared list. Because famously there's the man weds goat story which seems to pop up in there every now and again when it gets linked to on the internet again, and all the people who didn't see it the first several hundred times round go and look at this website.
Surprising how many people there are who have the internet and how many pages there are on the internet that you have not seen. Unfortunately, now we've advertised this, there's a reasonable chance that people might start looking for Man Weds Goat on BBC, which might spark another revival. That's assuming we have a lot of listeners, really. But
I would be very impressed if we managed to get that high.
Yeah, if everybody go and look at Man Weds Goat, who is listening to this now, and if we can get it onto the most shared ones on BBC News, I'm going to feel really happy.
But no, this story is Wedding for Ram and Deer at China Zoo.
We should also look this one up. This is cute.
And yes, Ram and Deer is set to be married, and it's got, of course it's married with the scare quotes around it, because it's not actual marriage, obviously, because it's a ram and a deer.
Well, I don't know. You could say, do you, Ram... well, actually, they have names. They're not going to be just like Ram and Deer. Do you, Ram, take Deer to be your lawful wedded deer?
Chang Mao the Ram and Chunzi the Doe.
Chunzi the Doe. But, yes, these are two animals who were in captivity. It's a zoo, was it? Is it a zoo?
It's in a zoo, yep.
Yep. And they are very affectionate to each other. They've grown up together because they... Basically, they put all the herbivores together. They figured herbivores won't eat each other. Yeah, so it's fine, yeah. We can put them together.
And so, yes, Chunzi the Doe often licks Chang Mao's hair, and Chang Mao the Ram attacked male deers that dared approach Chunzi the Doe.
Yep. So you can see where that relationship is centered. And anyway, they were very affectionate towards each other, but then... Chang Mao, the ram. Again, there's a little tagline underneath the picture, with the picture of the two, which says Chang Mao has not exactly been faithful to Chunzi the deer, because as Chang Mao found the only female sheep that happened to be around and fathered a lamb, so they decided, okay, you know, this is wholesome sheep relationship. We'll put them, the happy family, all together. And then the ram got very upset because it was no longer with his deer. I like the fact it's a deer as well. It's just, oh, my deer. Anyway, and the deer was similarly trying to poke her head through the railings, I think, to get to the ram. So they eventually could bear it no longer. They were looking at this terrible scene, sort of Romeo and Juliet style, going, no, they must be cast asunder no more. And they've put them together, and now they're holding a ceremony. I'm presuming they're not going to do anything stupid like put a tiara on top of the deer's head.
Apparently the animals will be clad in wedding clothes.
Oh, no.
And tickets are being sold for their wedding day.
Although, actually, we're using this as a future tense. This article actually came out on the 13th of February, and it was supposed to happen on Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
So, presumably this has already happened. But, so if you wanted to go and see the wedding of the ram and the deer, I'm afraid
in China,
you may have missed your chance.
But we've got time for one last story before we finish off, and finish off with reading the emails that we've got. Okay. And this is that basically this one is purely for go and look at the pictures on the internet. We can't do this one justice on the radio, because they found that one of the world's tiniest lizards in Madagascar, which the young ones are about the size of a match head. Not counting a little bit longer for their tail.
So, yeah, this is the story of the tiny chameleon, which is a concept that I was introduced to last night and had no idea what was being talked about. But, yes, it said the first line of this article says it was spotted by keen-eyed researchers. They like the idea that they'd never spotted it before because the chameleon was sort of very, very small and blending in, and somebody was sort of looking through a microscope and they said, hold on a moment, it's a tiny lizard.
Yes, they're called it Brookesia micra.
Brookesia micra.
Which I think makes it sound a little bit like a car. Rather than just very small. But there's another wonderful quote in here, which is saying, it's possible that the big island of Madagascar has produced a general group of dwarf chameleons, and the very small island has produced a tiny species.
Yes, well, I mean, Madagascar has... there's something, some stat, I don't remember the exact stat, but for the amount of different species they found in Madagascar, it's something like a quarter of all the world's different species or something like that have been found in Madagascar, because all the other ones tend to join up, like Africa and Europe and Asia all join up as one big landmass, whereas Madagascar has sort of floated off to the side, and that's where you get all these wonderful species, like this tiny, tiny chameleon, which I can't help feeling like... there was the micro pig boom. I say boom.
It's like an exploding micro pig.
Yeah. There was the micro pigs who were very popular as house pets. I can't help feeling that people might take on this idea of tiny chameleons as being the new cute thing to have.
In fact, on Twitter, there's a quote from Twitter for no apparent reason on this BBC website. It said, Claire A. Voice says, super cute, size of a rice grain, exclamation mark. So, is rice super cute then? Because that's also the size of a rice grain.
It's true. If that is your criteria for cuteness, then rice is definitely cute. And edible.
And we've just had one email to finish off suggesting that they've taken jam to mean the food stuff earlier, the unit of jam. So, one mega jam is one pickle, and one giga pickle equals one conserve.
Well, of course, eventually you get up to a whole condiment set if you carry on doing this. But, yes, we won't say how much is a marmalade.
Anyway, that's all we've got time for. Please like CamFM on Facebook and Burst Above All. We'll be back next week with some more city news. Thank you and good night.